Today we're beginning here on the bottom of Chav Gimel and Bet, two lines from the bottom. Ibayilahu, Plige Rabbanan Alei did Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov below? Did the Rabbanan disagree with Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov's position in the Mishnah? The way that we're reading the Mishnah now, there are two parts to the Mishnah. There's the first part of the Mishnah, which is Afarotzela Dir et Chaviro, Sheuchalitz Lo. That piece is about Nidre Ziruzim, which is similar to our first Mishnah. Then we have the second half of the Mishnah, which was the tznai that a person can put in place up front in order to protect or stop future nidarim from taking effect. So here the Gemara is asking, this nidre ziruzim that's described here by Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, do the Rabbanon agree to it? Or do they limit nidre ziruzim to the case in which we're talking about a negotiation, a business negotiation there where it's clear that both parties are trying to get to a price that is different than what they're taking the nether about, and therefore that's called Nidre Ziruzim. But this case here, where a person takes the nether with regards to Hana, if the person doesn't come in with them, they wouldn't deem that to be Nidre Ziruzim. V'im tom alam ar plige. And even if you say that they argue, Hilchato Kavate, although, is the locha like him, or is the locha not like him? Now, you have a balance here, because in general, we have a principle that Mishnat Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Kavinaki, which means that when Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov speaks in the Mishnah, generally the halacha will be like him. On the other hand, if the Rabbanan argue on him, it's a dat yachid versus the Rabbim, which would favor passing like the Rabbim. So who is the halacha like? Tashma. The first attempt to figure out if the Rabbanan argue on him is it's not. We have a Mishnah. Omer lechaveiro konam she'eni nene lecha im iata notel levincha kur shel chitim. Ushtei chaviyot shel yayin. Person says, taking a nether, that I will not get any more hana from you if you don't take this gift, which I'm granting to your son, which is a kur of chitim and two barrels of wine. Harizeh yechol la'atir et nidro shelo apil chacham. A person can be released from that nether even without a shelat chacham. Now, he's giving it over here to his son, as the Rosh says, Derech Kavodu, Shikabel Matana Levana V'lo Le'atzmo. That really, the gift is for the recipient himself, but it's more of a Kavod to give it to his son than to give it to the recipient himself. Yes, it's less of an affront that the gift doesn't go directly to the individual, or it's kids that are Sumech al Shulchano, therefore it is supporting them and it helps him to support his children. But here he wants to grant a gift to this individual, and the individual is refusing to take the gift. So he takes the neder that I won't get any more hana from you unless you accept the gift. She'achol amar lo, because the recipient can say back to him, Kol ma'amarta lo b'shvil kvodi, didn't you do this for my benefit? The reason that you took the neder is because you wanted me to get the kavod of receiving the gift. Zehu kvodi, this is my kavod, that I don't want the gift. I mean, that sometimes the kavod of the individual is the ability to say no and to reject the gift. That is my kavod, and not accepting the gift. And therefore, it's deemed, or for me, it is if I got the kavod that you were trying to generate in giving me the gift, I got that by denying the gift, or by rejecting the gift. And since I did that, now the nether should not take effect, because you simulated what you were trying to accomplish through the neder. Now the Rosh over here says, Zeu Kvodi, is because Sone Matanot Yichyeh. That is an individual who has a general view in life not to take gifts, and that gifts are not necessarily positive, as the quote that is often brought in the Gemara, Sone Matanot Yichyeh, the one who dislikes gifts will live a long life. And we have Gemarot that from that result of that end up with disputes between the Rabbanon where they leave the property and nobody wants to take it. So to over here, my kavod is that I don't accept gifts. Even though you wanted to give me the gift, the best gift you can give me is not giving me the gift. That's one way to look at it, as the Rosh says. The Ran, on the other hand here, mentions that he wants to give him a matana chashuva. This is a big gift that he wants to give to him. And based on the Yerushalmi, there are three different possible scenarios in terms of what the situation could be. One situation is that the individual says that, I know you wanted to give the gift for my kavod, and the grantor of the gift says, yes, it was for your kavod. In that case, everybody would agree that it is null and void because the guy says it's as if I got that kavod, or my kavod is not receiving it. If the grantor of the gift says it's lichvodi, meaning for my benefit that I want to give you the gift, then it's clear that the neder is chal, because it doesn't matter what the recipient says anymore about his kavod. The whole focus is on the kavod of the grantor of the gift. Therefore, it's clear there that the neder is chal. The case where we're going to see in a second, Rabbi Meir doesn't argue over here, but he argues on the next case. The Ran believes that Rabbi Meir should have argued on our case as well. There are others that distinguish between the cases. But the case where Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim would argue is the case where he gave it stam. That he just gave it, and he doesn't explain, or we don't know whether it was for his kavod, or for the recipient's kavod. And then, when we come to figure it out, do we assume that stam, when you give a gift, it's for the beneficiary's kavod, or is it for the grantor's kavod? And that'll be the machloket here between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim as to which party is determinant of whether the neder is chal. So taima damar zehu kvodi. The reason that it works over here is because he says it's my kavod. Halav hachi. Had he not said this, nederhu, it would have been an effective neder. It's only because the recipient says it's my kavod, not to receive it over here, that the neder is considered to be nidre ziruzim, and it's null and void. But had he not made such a claim, then the situation would have been that the neder takes effect. Mani, who's the author of this braita? I Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. If it's Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, nidre ziruzim avi. It's exactly the case that we mentioned in our Mishnah. In our Mishnah also, he's trying to encourage behavior, so he takes the neder. So to over here, he's trying to encourage the recipient to take the gift, so he's taking a neder. That's nidre ziruzim. Ella, it must be, shmaminah, plige rabbonon alei, that the rabbonon argue on Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, and this is the rabbonon's position. Gemara says, the olam, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, he. It is Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. So then, why does the neder take effect over here? Mode Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, bahai, de nidra havi. He agrees in this case that it is a neder. Damalei, because he says to him, lo kal ba'ano, I'm no dog, dimitanina minach, that I get benefit from you. Below mitanit minai, and you accept no benefit from me. It can't be a one-way street. So based on this, the Ran explains over here that the case is a case where this individual, the giver of the gift, the grantor of the gift over here, received or must have received a lot of hanah from the person he's trying to gift. So he's already taken a lot or received a lot from that individual, and here is his return. He wants to give back to this individual. So he grants him a gift. So now, you say this is nidre ziruzim, in the sense that he wants the recipient of the gift to take it because he's benefited so much from the recipient of the gift. Now, in a normal case of nidre ziruzim, it's all about the kavod of that individual. So that kavod of the individual, if he comes back and says, look, it's my kavod not to accept the gift, then maybe in there you can argue that he is as if he accepted it, as if he got that kavod, and therefore the neder doesn't take effect. But it means without that line, the neder would take effect, even though this is like nidre ziruzim. The reason being that this individual has a feeling of an imbalance in their relationship. And therefore, he wants this individual to take the gift, and he really believes he will not take any more hana from him unless he takes the gift. He's basically saying, listen, I've gotten a lot from you. I want to return. I want to give some back. And if you don't accept this, I'm really taking a neder that I won't get any more hana from you. I refuse to accept more from you because you won't take anything back from me, and it's becoming a lopsided relationship. And then I'm like the dog who only takes and does not give. And that's his objection over here to the individual not accepting the gift. But in that case, it's not just nidre ziruzim. Nidre ziruzim just simply says, I want you to act in a certain way, so I take a neder to try to engender that behavior. Over here, he has more of a reason behind his neder, not simply to engender the behavior, but something that makes him feel that there is equality in the relationship. And therefore, he's not simply trying to engender behavior, he's making this gift the premise of their relationship continuing. And therefore, his neder will be chal in this case, even according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. So that would be the difference between this Mishnah over here and our Mishnah that we saw before. The other explanation that Ron gave was the difference between the size of the gift. Whether it was a very large gift, or it is a small gift. Now, the other difference that you could note over here is that in the scenario here, he's madir himself from the mikabel, versus in the Mishnah where he's madirim from his nechassim. And that's from another difference between this scenario and the scenario in the Mishnah. And that's what gives away the fact that we're talking about some sort of quid pro quo relationship, where he's saying that if you don't allow me to also give to you, then I will not get any benefit from you in the future. And that's why he says, I will not receive any anah from you rather than from his nechassim, because the focus is on their relationship, not on the nechassim. And that's how this is differs from the case of our Mishnah. All right, so therefore, we have this possibility that Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov will be the author of this statement, even though it disagrees with his position in the Mishnah, because the cases are slightly different. In this case, there's, besides just the invite or the granting of the gift, there is also this background to their relationship, which there's been a lopsided relationship until now. So now we have another case, Tashma. Ha'omer l'chaveiro kunam sha'ata nehenit li im i'ata noten livni kur shel chitim u'shtei chaviyot shel yayin. So kunam, that you will not get any more benefit from me unless you gift my son this amount, this kur shel chitim and shtei chaviyot shel yayin. It's a type of blackmail which basically makes it into a nidrei ziruzim. He doesn't really want the nether to take effect. He's trying to engender behavior in the other party. It's not that he really wants the Isra not to take effect. He just wants the other party to grant the gift. So he says, if you give this stuff to my son, then we won't have a problem. But if you don't give it to my son, then konam shatan enetli, you cannot get any more benefit from me. So Rabbi Meir Omer, ad shiitein. Rabbi Meir says it's a fully effective nether until he actually gives the gift. So chamimurim, av ze yuchol atir et nidro shel al pi chacham. You can have this be a nidrei ziruzim in a sense, which is that you can have a Torah without the chacham, shel omar. Because the individual who took the neder can say, hareini ki ilu hitkabalti. It's as if I received it. So even after he took the neder, he can say, I was trying to encourage the behavior, but for whatever reason, now I don't necessarily need you to give the gift, and it's as if I received the gift, meaning that it's as if you've done this kabod for me, and I feel fully satisfied by it. Now, the Ram brings from the Rashba that there, he qualifies this idea of kilu itkabalti to only in scenarios where there is a maaseh. There's an action that needs to be taken, because in essence, what the person could do is, if he was going to be gifted something, he could take the gift and give it right back to the individual. So therefore, he has the right to say kilu itkabalti. It's as if I received it. On the other hand, if bitu maaseh, if the person says, you are a sur banai in my possessions, if you go to a such and such a place, and then the person goes to such and such a place, you can't say now it's as if you didn't go to that place. Because that's not a case where you could just flip it back or give it back to the individual, and that's not considered to be the case of kilu hitkabalti. Although the Ram brings that there are others who definitely argue on the Rashba, and believe even in that case, the person can say it's as if you kept what I wanted. It's as if you did what I wanted, even though the person did just the opposite of what was said in the neder. The Ram also notes over here that you can only say kilu kabalti if the children are dependent on the parent. Because in that case, it's really the parent's money in the end, and therefore he can say it's as if I received the gift. On the other hand, if the children are independent, and then he doesn't give the gift, the father can't say kilu kabalti, it's as if I received the gift, because the beneficiaries are the children. And the children are the only ones who can make that determination, since the neder really forced the grantor of the gift to give it to those independent parties, to the children. And the children are the only ones who can make that statement, not the father or not the maker of the neder. So Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim disagree over here. Now, the Ran says that Rabbi Meir would have argued in the first case as well. The reason to disagree with that, or to say that Rabbi Meir's position here is different than it would be in the previous case, is exactly what you're saying. In the previous case, the neder seemingly was not chal, because the whole point of the neder was to grant kavod to the other party, and then the other party says, listen, it's my kavod, I don't need it. But over here, the neder takes effect. Then it's seemingly, after the fact, he's saying, listen, all right, I didn't really mean you had to give it. It's as if you gave it already, I accept it. But the truth is, it seems like the neder was chal up front, and now he's saying this other piece, which is kilu itkabalti. Because the taker of the neder, here is the one who now changes the dynamic. In the first scenario, The take of the neder is trying to grant something to someone else, and that party says, listen, it's my kavod not to take it. Over here, it's the recipient himself who's taking the neder, and then saying afterwards, you know what, it's as if I received it. So over here, you could argue that there's much more reason for Rabbi Meir to believe that here the neder was chal, versus in the first case where the neder was not chal. Again, the Ran says that Rabbi Meir argues in both scenarios, but there are Rishonim who believe that Rabbi Meir only argues in this scenario because of the fact that these scenarios are not exactly the same. The only reason it works over here is because he says it's if I received it. Again, if he didn't do that, it would be an effective neder. Mani, who's the author of this braita? Rabbi Elezer ben Yaakov. If it's Rabbi Elezer ben Yaakov, nidre ziruzim avi. Again, it's a neder that's taken to encourage or engender behavior. That's a nidre ziruzim. And therefore, it should fall away by itself. Elalav rabbonon. It must be that this is author Rabbi Rabbonon uplige. And they argue on Rabbi Elezer ben Yaakov. And even though now we know that somebody argues on Rabbi Elezer ben Yaakov, here Rabbi Meir argues on him, Gemara might be searching for one of two things. Either for whether the Rabbim are cholek on Rabbi Elezer ben Yaakov, or is it just Rabbi Meir? Or maybe Rabbi Meir's position is unique to the scenario here, and we will not extrapolate it to other cases of Nidrei Ziruzim because of the particulars of these cases, which we have noted already. It says, lo, the olam Rabbi Elezer ben Yaakov. It is Rabbi Elezer ben Yaakov. Omode Rabbi Elezer ben Yaakov behai the Nidra Avi, that in this instance, it is a neder. Shemdamalei, because the party who took the neder can say, lav malkana, I'm no king. De mahanina locha, that I'm always giving to you. Va'at lo mahanetli, and you're not giving anything back to me. So here there's an imbalance in the relationship. But the person trying to solve the imbalance over here is not like in the first case where it's the recipient that was trying to solve the imbalance. Over here, it's the grantor of all of this benefit that's trying to solve the imbalance and saying, listen, I've been giving to you for years. It's about time that you give something back to me. And therefore, he can make a statement, La Malkano, I'm no king where I have endless resources just to give to you and you don't have to give anything back to me. So because of that, again, that will differ from our Mishnah. Different from our Mishnah in the sense that in our Mishnah, the individual is just trying to encourage the behavior of eating. Over here, this individual is saying, basically, our relationship is so imbalanced that I want this neder to take effect, and you no longer can get any benefit from me until you even out the relationship. You start giving me something in this relationship. That's already an overriding reason, which would say that the neder is chal, even though it's quote-unquote a nidre ziruzim, because there's a logic or some sort of reasoning behind why he would take such a neder, not just because of the ziruzim, but in essence to have it come into effect and to prevent the hana'ah to say, listen, the buck stops here. If you don't start giving to me, we're not going to have this relationship anymore. You can't just keep taking from me. And because of that, it's an effective neder. Now again, here you can obviously see why that there might be a difference between this case and the previous case, or this case and the Mishnah, where, in this case, the taker of the neder, again, is the one who's demanding the action. In the other cases, the taker of the neder is trying to get someone else to be a recipient. Over here, the taker of the neder is the recipient. Over here, you could see this case being different than the other two cases, by which you would either have a different din come here, possibly that's why Rabbi Meir argues, or possibly you could understand why la halacha, we might not paskin like this, but we might accept the other taina. We might accept the taina of lav malkana, but not accept the taina of lav kabana, because this case is a much harder case to say is a nidre ziruzim, even if he says ki'ilui kabalti, because the taker of the neder is the one making the claim after the fact. And if he's the one making the claim after the fact, it's much harder to argue that that's what he had in mind originally, and now he's saying, oh, it's as if I got it. It's one thing if the other party is saying, look, it's as if it's my kavod that I got your gift already. That's different than the taker of the neder making such a statement. Just as a sidebar, Rav Scheinberg, Zatzal, in his sefer, Mishmeret Chayim, talks about a case on Purim, where people or individuals give mishloach manot, and the recipient says, listen, it's okay. I don't want this mishloach manot. It's as if you gave it to me. I don't need any more food. I can't handle any more food. But I know you brought the gift, and it's as if I received the gift. Does that count as mishloach manot? That's how you know. Is that mishloach manot, or is that not qualified as mishloach manot? Does mishloach manot require the recipient to actually receive De mishloach manot? Or is it enough that the person knows that you wanted to give it to them or tried to give it to them, and when they reject it, that's already considered to be mishloach manot? Might have to do with the chakira within mishloach manot. What's the purpose of mishloach manot? If the purpose of mishloach manot is to provide for the seuda, food for the seuda, then in that case, obviously, if he doesn't accept it, then it doesn't work as mishloach manot, because the mishloach manot has to be utilized at the seuda in order to be mishloach manot. On the other hand, if the point of the mishloach manot is to harbot ava vereyut, to engender good feeling between the parties, then you could, in a sense, have the same scenario as right here, which is the person says, ki ilu itkabalti. It's as if I received it. And you are generating through that the goodwill that we're trying to do through all these mishloach manot. And therefore, ki ilu itkabalti would suffice for the person being yotze in his granting of the gift of mishloach manot. And the other party would not have to actually receive it in order for it to be deemed mishloach manot or accomplishing the mitzvah of mishloach manot. But it might derive from this issue of ki ilu itkabalti, whether that is sufficient terms. Again, it would depend what you think mishloach, purpose of mishloach manot is, but a similar idea here of ki ilu itkabalti. Amalei, mark shisha, breder of chista Rav Hashi, tashma, nidrei onsin, in a case of nidarim that were done under duress, he diroch chavero sheuchal etzlo, a person takes a neder, the host takes a neder that he will eat by him, v'chalahu, o chalabino, he got sick, or his son got sick, or sheikvonar, or the river overflowed, or overflowed its banks, or there was no way to cross the river, havlavachi, nederhu. If it wasn't for that, it would be a neder. So here we have scenarios where there are exogenous variables out of his control that prevent him from accomplishing the neder and attending the se'uda. In that case, we see that when they have these variables, that's what makes it into ois neder, that it's not a neder. Halav achi, without that neder, it would be a neder, even though this is clearly, again, nidrei ziwuzim. They're trying to encourage behavior. Mani, ir Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, if it's Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, ziwuzim avi. It's a case of a neder to encourage behavior. And according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, that type of neder is a nidrei ziwuzim. El Rav Rabbonon, must be the Rabbonon or the authors here, who plague it, and they argue on him. When it says, lo, the olam Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, umi savart, do you really think, who took the neder here? The adre mizamno buzmino? The host took a neder to encourage the guests to come, which is similar to our Mishnah, where he says that he takes a konam if you don't show up to the meal. So the person being put under pressure is the guest, and he's taking a net, the host is taking a net that you better come and eat by me. And then there was some sort of onus preventing the accomplishment of the net there. So the fact that it's nidrei onsin is the fact that the guest can't make it to the dinner, or can't make it to the meal, because something happened that was out of their control completely, that something that could not have been anticipated. And that's why it's nidrei onsin. But on the other hand, in terms of what it's trying to accomplish, is that it's a nidrei ziwuzim. The host is trying to encourage the guest to show up at the meal, and that would be nidrei ziruzim. And that's why you would have thought that this goes against the position of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. So look, the Gemara says, don't think that that's not the scenario here. What is the scenario? Dizmina adre le mizamdo. The guest forced the host to take a neder. He wanted to be invited to the party. He wanted to be invited to the wedding. And he said to them, Darmalei, Mizanant li l'sudateich? Are you going to invite me to your meal? Are you going to invite me to your simcha? I'm laying. He says, yes. Neder zalecha. This neder will be in force, meaning to corroborate that you are actually going to invite me to the simcha, invite me to the meal. Obviously, it was a wanted invitation or something that he really wanted. The Rosh over here suggests that he was invited to another place, and he doesn't want to have to go to that other place. And he wants the guy here to take a neder that he'll invite him, or put him under a neder that he'll be invited, so that he can tell the other party that he was under neder to go to this party, and that's why he couldn't join the seuda in the other location. And therefore he says that you agreed you were going to invite me, I'll make it into a neder of a nadar. But here you can't say that it's a nidrei ziruzim. Nidrei ziruzim is when you're trying to encourage someone else to behave in a certain manner. Over here you're not trying to encourage behavior. Over here it's the host is not trying to encourage the guest to come. The guest wants to ensure that he is invited to come. That's a different type of neder. He says, neder zalecha. He goes, that which you said is now beneder. And the other guy accepts the neder. V'nadar, he took the neder. V'chalahu, oshachal beno. And then there was some sort of onus preventing the accomplishment of the neder. The host got sick, or his son got sick. Oshach vonar, or whatever reason the river overflowed and he couldn't host the meal. Or the guest can't make it to the dinner, or can't make it to the meal, because something happened that was out of their control completely, that something that could not have been anticipated, that prevent them from accomplishing the neder and attending the se'uda. But over here, harielu nidrei onsin. That's the case of nidrei onsin, because the host was only unable to accomplish what he set out to accomplish and to fill the nether because of something that was totally out of his control, and he would have to say something that he couldn't have anticipated. The nidrei onsin, where the guy under duress, the guy they're coming to steal from his house, and he basically takes the nether but get them out of there, that might be nidrei onsin, because that's under duress. So here, it's a nidrei onsin because not that the nether was taken out of duress, but the accomplishment of the nether was prevented because of duress. So you have nidrei onsin in different ways. The onus can be at the time of the neder, or the onus can be in the accomplishment of the neder. Now, if it was something that could have been anticipated, then you can't call it onus. If the river normally overflows on a regular basis, you can't claim that that's an onus, especially if it's for Yom Acharon. We saw that back in the Gemara in the beginning of Ketubot. Discussion there with regards to Gitin and Ketubot, whether there was a din there of onsin with regards to the accomplishment of what the marriage was set out to do. So there, if you were supposed to anticipate it, or you could have known that something like this would have happened, then we do hold you accountable. But if it's something that's completely out of your control, something that you couldn't have anticipated, then if the failure to accomplish it is simply an onus. It's an unexpected risk that took place here, and therefore it wipes out the need to accomplish the neder, or the failure to accomplish the neder won't trigger the neder over here. So that's why Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov would agree over here, because this is not nidrei zivuzim anymore. By flipping who is taking the neder and what the scenario is, we changed it from the host enforcing on the guest to come, which would be nidrei zivuzim. We flipped it and said it's the guest trying to enforce the host to invite him. And in that scenario, that's not called nidrei zivuzim, because the invite was agreed to already. The neder is just enforcing the word of the host that he said he will invite him. Tashma. Yeter al kain, Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. So now, yeter al kain means that not only this, but also this, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, Omer lecha veiro, konam shani nene lecha, I take a nether, I know if I get any benefit from you, im iata mitarheach etzli, unless you come and be my guest, betuchalmi pat chama, and you'll eat, break hot bread with me, betishtemi kos chamin, and you will drink with me a nice hot cup of tea, vala, hikpid kinegdo, af elu nidrei zivuzim. And the other individual took offense to this, af elu nidrei zivuzim. That is still called nidrei zivuzim. So over here he's saying that I will not get any benefit from you if you don't come and be hosted by me and enjoy my company. And the other individual was makpid and did not come. He refused to come based on that. Over here the neder hana is a little different. In the case of our Mishnah, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says that if you don't come and eat by me, you will not be able to get any more hana from me. Whereas over here in this case, he's saying, konam, that shani enen elecha, I will no longer get any more benefit more hana from you if you don't come and be hosted by me. What Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says is this is also nidrei zivuzim. In that case, it's also deemed to be nidrei zivuzim, because again, that's still again trying to encourage behavior by the other party, and that's called nidrei zivuzim. So, Alpha gav de shaykh le meimar lab kalbana. Even though you could say lab kalbana, shari wo osera nata mizuman ala atzmo, because he's being osera da hana from the mizuman, from the invitee here. Im lo yirtzeh le kabel mimenu hana zu. Shemachi ikal meimar dib dafka nadar. Even though here you could say that he definitely took a neder, filochi am rabbi lezim and Yaakov de nidrei zivuzim habi. That's still called nidrei zivuzim. Ul perish zeh, chazin ashta, damayda dachin an el, that which before, which we said that Afilu Rabbi Elazar Modeh Kohei Chadik Lameim Arlav Kalbana Dechuya Ba'almahi. It was just a way to reject the proof. But now that we know the truth is that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov still thinks that that's a nidrei zivuzim. The Lav Kushta de Milta, and it's not true anymore. And therefore, in this case, rejection of that explanation says that even in a case where you could have made a claim of Lav Kalbana, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov still says that that is considered to be Nidrei Zeruzim. Ule'idach Perusha, the Kadvin and Le'el, according to the other explanation which we gave above, the time alav the Kalbana Mishum de Mafukina and Ben Matanam Rubala Matanam Mu'etet, that the first way that Taran explains it, we said before, Lav Kalba Ana referred to the fact that there was this existing relationship where he had benefited greatly from this individual. And he basically says, enough is enough, you gotta take something from me. The other explanation that Taran gave was the difference between the size of the gift. Whether it was a very large gift, or it is a small gift. Over here, Ayat Erakein, the reasoning of Lav Kalbana would still apply. But in our scenario over here, we're talking about a small gift. He's asking to come have some bread and a little water with him. That's not a large gift. So over there, the reasoning of Lav Kalbana is not reasonable or effective. Elo, hayetzer okein, the karma shum de sagadatcha, kevin de miyached, v'amar pat chama v'kosh shachamim, dafka nadar. Because the fact that he specifically states what he wants the guy to do, maybe already that means that it's a real neder, and not a neder ziruzim. But in the end, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says it's neder ziruzim. There are a difference between these two understandings of what Lav Kalba Anah is, will affect what is being said over here. If you think Lav Kalba Anah has to do with their relationship, and their ability to be on an equal level, then just like up there, where we could have argued in Rabbi Lezer's position that Lav Kalbana, and therefore it's not Nidrei Zeruzim, you would have said the same thing in our scenario over here. Because he's saying, I will not receive any more ana from you until you come over here and you enjoy something with me. So that's the same scenario. And over here, Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov is clearly saying it's Nidrei Zeruzim. If he says it here, then he would have to say it above as well. And therefore, we would reject that explanation in Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov's position. On the other hand, if you believe the reason that he says Lav Kalbana up there is because of the size of the gift, which is the amount that he wants to grant this individual is sizable, and therefore there must be, again, the reason that he says Lav Kalbana is because he's giving a very large gift, because of they must have received something from him that was large. And that's where you can say Lav Kalbana. In our case here, we're talking about a small item, like come over, have some bread and water. That's not a significant gift. Over there, you can't argue Lav Kalbana. Because giving him back so little, you can't claim that that's to even out the score. Because this isn't enough to even out the score. And therefore, the reason that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says it's Nidrei Zeruzim is for exactly that reason. So you can't make the claim of Lav Kalbana. And maybe you would have thought, since he is mefaret, he details what he's going to give, that he really means it as a nether. No, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says it's Nidrei Zeruzim. But that means that, in essence, or at the core, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov still agrees to the position of Lav Kalbana. Because that's talking about a large gift. Over here, we're talking about a small gift, and the two are not contradictory. And therefore, we would not reject the Lav Kalbana. And the lo hodu lo chachamim. And the chachamim did not agree with Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. My lo hodu lo chachamim. What does it mean that they did not agree to the position of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov? Lav da'afilu b'kamaito. Isn't that even in the first scenario? Not only in this case, but in the earlier case as well. B'shma mino, pligi rabbonon alei. And that would show that the rabbonon would argue on him, shma mino. That would be the conclusion that they definitely argue on him. Now what the word kamaito means over here is not clear. What's the first scenario? Rashi seems to indicate that kamaito over here is the breitot that we brought before. Or you could argue the Kamaita is the Mishnah, the instance of our Mishnah, which was what the Yeter Al-Kain was coming to lay on top of. But it's still difficult to understand how the Gemara knew that from the fact that the Chachamim argue in this case. Just because they argue in this case, who says they would argue in the other cases? Now, according to that one explanation in the Ran about Lav Kalbana, it's clear that this would force you to say the same thing by at least one of the Baraitot. So if you take the Kamaita or the Breito, that would make sense. But if you say it's the Mishnah, why is it so obvious if they argue here, they would also argue in our Mishnah as well? And therefore, the Ran notes here that there was an alternate Girsa that said that maybe the Rabbanan also argue in the Kamaita case. And the Gemara says, lo, rakmivad Breito. They only argue in the latter case. We don't have any evidence from here as to whether they argue in the first case or the earlier cases. And therefore, the word afilu Kamaita is not a statement, but rather afilu Kamaita was a question. And the Gemara's answer, which we don't have in our Nusach, our Gersa, is lo, rak b'vatraita, only in the latter case. My Abi Allah, what's the din here? Tashma, Dam Ravuna, Alocha ka Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. The Alocha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, Bechina Maravadar Ba'ava, Alocha ka Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. But the Alocha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Now, the Mayav Allah could be a question in one of two ways. It could be a question as to whether the Hakamim argue, based on the Girsa that we're not sure if they argue in the Kamaita case. And therefore the answer is, if you say Alocha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, he's going to answer both questions, both that there is an argument, and number two, who the Alocha is like. On the other hand, if we already determined that the Chachamim argue, then the Mayavi Allah is a simple question of who is the Alocha like over here. Now, when Rav Huna says Alocha Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, what or who is he addressing? So the Ran here brings three possibilities of who is what he was saying. One possibility is he's saying Alocha Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, that means in all scenarios, in every scenario that we bumped into Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, the Alocha is like him, which the Ran brings, and the name is Rebbeim. On the other hand, the Ran himself makes the following two suggestions about what Rav Huna might be referencing. There's a possibility that Alocha Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, only where we know for sure the Chachamim argued on him, and that's the scenario that we brought in the Yeter Al-Kain. Obviously now that would also mean that the Mishnah, the Alocha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, because there the Chachamim don't argue on him. So in both of those scenarios, it would be the case. But not necessarily in the case of the Breitot. The last possibility is that Alocha Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is only about the Mishnah, because the Mishnah is something that all the Amoraim knew about, and therefore when he says Alocha Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, he must be referencing something that everybody knew about, which is the Mishnah. A Breita or Breitot in general were not always known. So therefore when he says Alocha Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov without clarifying what the scenario is, it must be referencing the Mishnah, not the Breitot at all. And therefore it means that they argue in the Mishnah, because the Mishnah, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is Kavanaki, and therefore his Mishnah overrides our normal principle of Yachid v'Rabim, Alocha k'Rabim. Now once we've established that the Alocha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, the Ran notes over here, the way that we explained the issue of Lab Kalba Ana will actually come into play now, and determine where the Alocha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Because if you believe that the Breita undermines what we said before about Lav Kalba Ana, that means that we pass on like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, and the claim of Lav Kalba Ana is not an effective claim. On the other hand, according to the second way the Ran read the Gemara, if you can reconcile between Lav Kalba Ana and the Yeter Al-Kain, because the Yeter Al-Kain is talking about a smaller gift, whereas the Breita was talking about a larger gift, then you can pass on like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov with regards to the Yeter Al-Kain, and still subscribe to this idea of Lav Kalba Ana in the cases of larger gifts. And then, for sure, by the case of Lav Malka Ana, that the Neder would take effect and not be considered to be a Neder Ziuzim, because we don't find anywhere where there's a contradiction to that statement that we propose within Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. So that means, for sure, the claim of Lav Malka Ana is sufficient to determine that the nether is a good nether in this case. And as we mentioned before, it makes more sense in that case that the nether should take effect. And Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov would agree to that. The only question we have is by the Lav Kalba Ana, does Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov disagree with that because of what we found in the case of Yeter Al-Kain? Or does he agree with that because the case of Yeter Al-Kain is differentiated from the case of Kalba Ana, because one of them is about a smaller gift and versus a bigger gift, versus explaining them that we wanted a more balanced relationship, irrespective of the size of the gift. It's Mishnah. Nidre Havai. Nidarim that are clearly exaggerations. Which is, Amar Konam, Im lo ra'iti b'derech hazeh ko le Mitzrayim. I am now Asur Bana. If I didn't see along this road numerous people, like the number of people leaving Mitzrayim. Im lo ra'iti nachash korat beit abad. If I didn't see a snake the size of the heavy beam of the olive press, which is a very large, large size. The Tosfot suggests that these two Nidarim or Nidrei Havai are the same thing, that in both cases he's exaggerating the fact, but it's not because he's lying, but simply that's the way that people speak. I saw a snake, you can't believe the size of that snake, da-da-da-da. Or I saw this many people and you won't believe it, this many people. But it's something that's used and as an expression, but is known to be an exaggeration, but is again deemed to be the truth because that's the way that people speak about these types of scenarios. Now what the Ran claims over here in the Mishnah is that the Mishnah gave you two examples of Nidrei Havai. One example, which is an example of an exaggeration, where the exaggeration is true, but it's just the way that people speak. So for instance, If you were to ask somebody, oh, were you at this event? And the person says, yeah, I was there. And there were millions of people there. It's clear that there were not millions of people there, but that's the way that people speak. That there are millions of people there means there's a lot of people there. So that's the first case of Nidrei Havai over here, which is that, in a sense, his neder is true. Because he's saying, I saw Kolei Mitzrayim. Now, were there literally Kolei Mitzrayim there? Not necessarily. But that's an expression for a lot of people, and he's telling the truth. That's the way that he looked at it, as if there were Kolei Mitzrayim there. The second scenario, as the Gemara will clarify, is that there is no such thing as a Nachash Kikorat Beit Abad. Doesn't exist. You could argue that it was just, I saw this massive snake, it's as big as a house, as big as a beam of the Beit Abad. The Gemara does not interpret it that way. And therefore, this scenario is a case where it's just not plausible. The guy is just making things up. So in the second scenario, that's an exaggeration, but an exaggeration that has no truth to it, which is that he saw a snake, but he never saw a snake that size, and he's not trying to, as the Gemara say, talk about the size of the snake. We'll see that later on in the Gemara. And therefore, the second Divrei Havai is an exaggeration, but an exaggeration that has no bearing to the truth. Right, so the first one will actually be a nether, but it'll nether that won't go into effect because he told the truth. The second one will also not be a nether, not because he told the truth, but because what he's saying is ridiculous. And therefore, it's not a nether. So those are the two types that the Ran claims, the two types of Nidrei Havai. And through this, the Ran explains why the Gemara here doesn't bring the third scenario that's brought in the Gemara in Shavuot, which is, if I saw a camel flying in the air. Because he says the case here of the Nachash Kikorat Beit Abad is similar to the case of the flying camel, which is something that is completely ridiculous or impossible, and not an exaggeration in the sense of that's the way people speak about these types of scenarios. So Tano Nidrei Havai Mutarim, Shvuot Havai Asurin, which is the gears that we have in our Gemara, that when it comes to Nidrei Havai, they unwind, they don't take effect at all. Whereas Shvuot Havai Asurin, when it comes to a Shvua, they would take effect. The Ran already says that that's not the proper girsa, but rather Kach Shvuot Havai Mutarot, that even a Shvuah would be mutar in this scenario. As you can see in the Masorah Shas, that was also the girsa of the Rambam. But if you do have the girsa, like we do in our Gemara, that Shvuot Havai Asurin, there is not clear what does it mean that Shvuot Havai Asurin. The Ramban and the Ran brings a similar type of explanation here with the alternate girsa, that even though this Shvuah is not effective to be oser you in anything, nevertheless, they are serene that it's a Shvuat Shav. And since it's a Shvuat Shav, you will get Malkot for that. There is no Malkot for a Neder Shav, but there is Malkot for a Shvuat Shav. And that distinction or differentiation results in the statement of the Gemara here that Nidrei Havai Mutarin and Shvuat Havai Asurin. Whereas the Rosh over here says, Mishum de Shvua Chamiro Tvei, Hilka Chamiro Le'asormi Derabanan. The Isur that's generated over here is an Isur Derabanan, not an Isur Doraita, and it has to do with the fact that Shvuot are much more Chamurot. Heichidami Shvuot Havai. What is the examples of an exaggerated Shvua that would take effect, as opposed to what happens here by the nether? If he says that I take a shvua, if I did not see on this way, Kolei Mitzrayim, midam kamar, is he saying anything? Now, you could argue that means, does he say anything that he's lying, and therefore, it's a shvuat sheker? Or, as the Ran says over here, midam kamar means, this is not the normal formulation of a shvua. So the problem or the deficit in this language is either, as the Rosh says, to kamen den oser shum davar alav, since he's not being oser anything, aim lo zoner ze shvua klal. The shvua is not taking effect because he's not connecting the shvua to anything. Or because there's some sort of deficit in this language which makes it that it's not really a shvua. And since there's no toela to the shvua, may not be a shvua sheker, but according to Ran, it's at least a shvua shav in this instance. So, Amar Abaye, Damar Shvua Shraiti, Shvua that I did see this, rather than Imlo Raiti if I did not see this. And so that's what Abaye comes to say here, Amar Abaye, Damar Shvua Shraiti, that he took a Shvua that I saw such a thing. So, the Shvua Shraiti is no different than the Neder Havai, and therefore there should be Mutar if you think that's the Girsa, or people don't speak in that way, then Shavuot Shariti is a Shvat Sheker in this instance. Then what's the question over here? Either this is clearly a Shvat Shav, if you think that people do not exaggerate by Shvuot, or if you think that by Shvuot's Mutar, then it's clearly not a Shvat Shav, because people do talk in this way, they do talk in a Derech Kuzma, and take a Shvuah in that manner. So you can look at the question one of two ways. According to those Rishonim that explain the Mishnah, like the Tosafot explained that it's all about Guzma, exaggeration, here the Gemara is either saying that a Neder, people are likely to exaggerate in this manner, or speak in this manner, but not by a Shvuah, and that's why by Shvuah it's a Surah. Or, if you think that the Gir says Muteret, then just like people exaggerate by a Neder, so too they exaggerate by a Shvuah. So according to those that say that Shvuah is similar to Neder, and that they're both Mutarot, then the Lomeli Meimar is, of course, if people speak in this manner, then the Shvuah is no different than the case of the Neder case. Or in the scenario where you think it's Asurot by Shvuah, that's clearly a Shvuah Shav that he's taking over here, because you're proposing that a person does not speak that way with regards to Shvuot, even though they might speak that way with regards to Nidarim. So either way, Abai, your statement is simple. In addition to that, Dumya de Neder Kamar, that it should be similar to a Neder in the sense that you're not just trying to substantiate what you're saying, but you're actually being Oser something on you. And the way that you have it, Shavuah Shiraiti, is just a substantiation. It's not necessarily being Oser anything in the world, and that's not similar to the Nedarim that you took in the Mishnah. The Ran has a slightly different version of what Rava's question is, and that there's a connection between the two, which is that he says that it has to be that the scenario of Shavuot and Nedarim are equal, because that's what we're making the comparison between. And if that's this case, in the Mishnah, where we have two cases of Guzma, one case where people exaggerate, the other case where people don't say that at all, it's clearly Sheker. In both those scenarios, we said that Neder's Mutar. Now then, when it comes to a Shavuah, Lomeli the Meimar, how could you suggest that in that case, a Shavuah is considered to be fine? It's one thing if you're talking about a Guzma and people speak that way, but when you're talking about Korat Beit Abad, according to the Ran, which is Sheker Gamur, there is clearly a Shavuah Shav, and you definitely would get Malkot for it. So how can you compare those two cases and say, oh, just like by Neder it's Mutar, so too by Shavuah will be Mutar? That just can't be the scenario. El Omer Rovo, the Omer Yasru Perot Olam Alai. So he generates a Shavuah in a manner similar to Neder, which is that there's some object that becomes a Sur here. Bishvuah, but he does it through a Shavuah rather than a Neder. Imlo Reiti Bider Chazek Ole Mitzrayim. And he premises it on substantiation of what he's saying, that I must have seen Kolei Mitzrayim on this pathway, and if I didn't see it, then all the Perot Olam are Asur to me, Bishvuah. And even though Rava's formulation is not really a Lashon of Shvuah, but a Lashon of Neder, nevertheless, it just means that he took a Shvuah that would have the proper Lashon of Shvuah, or because a Shvuah taken in Lashon Neder is a Yad L'Shvuah, which we saw earlier in the Masech that the Ran brought differing opinions with regards to that. And therefore, here in this scenario, you now have a parallel to the case of Neder in the Mishnah. According to the Bali and Tosafot, that both cases in the Mishnah are cases of Guzma exaggeration, then Shvuah and Neder look exactly the same now. And Rova just creates a formulation that matches the Isur generated in the Neder of the Mishnah in the case or the scenario of Shvuah. So according to the Gersa, that Shvuot are more Chamurot there, according to Rova, it would be a Surya, not because he's not telling the truth, but because simply he did it with Lashon Shvuah, which is more Chamor. Or according to the other Lashon, that Shvuot are Mutarim, what we're saying here is that there's no difference between a Shvuah and a Neder. And both those scenarios, he does not intend for the Shvuah to go through, he does not intend for the Neder to go through, because he's using language which clearly is either an exaggeration or not true. And therefore, he's just trying to substantiate what he saw, or what he's trying to convince the other party of, and not really to take the Neder or make the Shvuah. And the Ran explains over here, you would have thought that when you use a Neder to generate the Iser Perot, and you connect it to the statements of the Mishnah, since in both cases, one's Derech Uzma, so actually you're telling the truth, the other case is Sheker, So it's clear that you don't want the neder to be binding, and therefore the neder falls away because there's no such thing as a neder shav. You might have thought, in that scenario, the equivalent scenario by shvua, that even though he's lying, nevertheless, since a shvua in that scenario will be deemed to be a shvuat shav, he knows that the shvua has some impact on him, and maybe for that reason he thinks that the shvua takes effect, wants the shvua to take effect for the Isur Peirot. The Kamash Malon is that no, that it's still mutar. Even a shvua in that case, the Peirot remain mutarim, even though the shvua is deemed to be a shvuat shav. Because if he really intended to be also the Peirot, he wouldn't have used this vehicle, which is something that is not truthful. All right, we'll stop here on the second to last line on Chavdalid Amud Bet.